not going to get it anymore.
Well, we're dealing.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Are there other questions from subcommittee members? Thank you. Governor's office.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Corey Streisinger from the Governor's Office. You have in front of you a revised version of the Governor's Amendments, which respond to several of the concerns that were raised at the last hearing. The Governor's proposed amendments deal primarily with the disposition of forfeiture proceeds received by state agencies, assuming that House Joint Resolution 3, the proposed constitutional amendment, is adopted by the voters. The revised set of amendments, as the original set of amendments, create a special fund which could be used for law enforcement, prosecution, drug treatment, and drug education. The changes permit internal equitable sharing so that by way of intergovernmental agreements, local jurisdictions could among themselves agree on a division of proceeds that's incorporated in. And then the amendments themselves have been cleaned up in some of the ways that were discussed at the last hearing.
Madam Chair.
Representative.
Corey, I'm sorry to interrupt you. I'm not sure how your amendments or the revised amendments are labeled in our packets here, and it would be helpful if we had them in front of us.
Certainly. I believe they are the numbered 2, and they are identified as Governor's Proposed Amendments on House Bill 2282, revised March 27, 1989. And I have extra copies if anyone needs them.
Yeah, we'll find it here. It's in here somewhere.
They are after the compilation by committee counsel.
I could be in the wrong packet. Ta-da.
One of the issues that was raised by Attorney General Frohnmayer at the last hearing was the issue of how proceeds are to be split up and whether or not the disposition of the proceeds into this general fund, or this special fund rather, was appropriate. That is an issue which he and the governor will be discussing, and it's possible as a result of this they could jointly recommend some change to this, but at the moment this represents the governor's position. The current bill does not, this fills a gap in the current printed bill. The printed bill does not provide any mechanism for the disposition of forfeiture proceeds received by state agencies in the event that the constitutional amendment is adopted, and this is intended to come in and fill that. The amendments do not include in them some other amendments with which we are in agreement, and that includes a number of those in the consolidated set of amendments which Mr. Shepherd just discussed. For example, you'll see a notation at the end of these amendments that they assume the adoption of the proposed new Section 12, which I believe the Associated Oregon Counties have proposed, which would set up the equitable sharing mechanism. These proposals also include cost reimbursement of investigative costs, which was a point requested by the Attorney General at the prior hearing. I have a brief comment on the Dash 5 amendment also, which is that I'm not in a position at the moment to state the governor's position. He recognizes the need for funds to perform FLAP cleanups. I don't know how late the committee is planning to run this afternoon, but it's possible I would have some more definite information for you later this afternoon.
When do you anticipate that you would have different information for us? Before?
Probably by 3:30 or 4, Madam Chair. I would be glad
to our
to do that
meeting. Are there questions for Ms. Streisinger?
Madam Chair, if I could add another comment on a matter that Mr. Shepherd raised, and that has to do with the interrelationship between this bill and the federal statute. And it was also, I had not previously heard the opinion of the Attorney General's office that adoption of House Bill 2282 itself might preclude participation in the federal program. He and I have discussed it briefly, and we both think there's the arguments which could be made either way. One way in which participation in the federal program could potentially be preserved, or at least it would improve our argument that it was preserved, is if a section were added to House Bill 2282 specifically stating that it was not the legislature's intent to preclude participation in that program or disposition of proceeds as required under that program, that this bill was intended to govern only distribution of forfeiture proceeds produced by this bill, not forfeiture proceeds produced by any other means. Our current constitutional restriction does prohibit future participation in the federal program because it is all-encompassing. It applies to all forfeitures received by the state rather than simply forfeitures received under a specific program. We have in place some other specific forfeiture programs, for example, the fish and game programs, which will continue to forfeit into the Common School Fund. But I think it would be difficult to argue that because a very specific forfeiture statute dealing with fish and game violations attaches to the Common School Fund, that that precludes a general participation in the federal program. Likewise, and this is an issue on which I'm sure the Attorney General's office will have more to say, it is at least an argument could be made that if this bill specifies that its provisions govern only revenues produced by the bill, that the federal program should be untouched.
Well, Ms. Streisinger, that's an interesting point because I think it would really defeat the purpose of the Dash 5 amendment, which is to assist the state in methamphetamine lab cleanup. I mean, again, if we're focusing on a purpose here, we have a couple of mechanisms, not just this one or not just that one. Now we're trying to coordinate between the object of methamphetamine lab cleanup, which is obviously related to the drug problem that the forfeiture ordinance or the forfeiture bill is being contemplated to address. The issue that you're raising is the possibility that local governments, given the option of a 10% contribution in a federal program or a 25% contribution in a state program, will avoid the bill that we're sweating bullets over and have 15 proposed amendments to altogether. And I think that, I don't see any purpose in chesting that card at all. I would like to have a very full discussion of what the impact would be. I think that if we are going to design a 25% solution and a 10% solution, that the line of least resistance will be the 10% solution. If, on the other hand, we're trying to design something which is the exclusive solution, then I think the line of least resistance will be the exclusive solution, and we may be achieving what it is that we're seeking to achieve with this amendment.
Madam Chair, if I could...
If you'd address that, and then Representative Clark has a comment.
My concern would be more with the situation in which, rather than the adoptive seizure, which we've been talking about, where the federal government is really not involved and we simply take advantage of their procedure, my concern is rather with the situation where federal agents are necessarily involved because it is a joint investigation. And those are frequently our largest drug investigations where the FBI or the DEA is in fact on the scene and participating. And the superintendent may be able to offer more comments on the extent to which that occurs. My concern would be we obviously cannot govern the behavior of federal officials and the federal forfeiture process through House Bill 2282. I think it would be unfortunate if we were to lose the ability to participate in forfeiture generated through such an joint effort where 2282 itself might not be of assistance.
Madam Chair, we don't... Mr. Streisinger, we don't have to fly blind on this, do we? Can't we package up this bill and send it to the federal government and say, if we do this, what are you going to do?
Madam Chair, Representative Clark, I believe Mr. Shepard's already been in some discussions with the FBI on exactly that question, and I think the answer is we probably could push in various directions depending on how the bill came out. We have also, on previous occasions, we have sensitized our congressional delegation to this issue and its importance to the state of Oregon, and it's possible that they might be able to assist us in getting whatever interpretation it was that we felt best served our interests. But I wanted to raise the issue.
Okay. Madam Chair, I just point out that makes a whole lot of difference to me in terms of something like the Dash 5 amendments, is knowing, not just guessing what the consequence will be, but it can't be that hard to... Maybe it can be, but it ought not be that hard to find out what the consequence will be.
Madam Chair? Picking up on the flying blind,
it sounds like so far we're being told that we're going to crash and burn if we keep following this particular flight path. We better keep that in mind. But as an alternative, couldn't we have two? I'm just throwing this out for you, Ms. Dreisinger. Two approaches. One is the forfeiture approach where we're going to participate with the federal government. The other is the forfeiture approach where we're not. Say, this is our state plan. This is what we're going to do when we know the feds aren't involved. Or switch to Channel B when the feds are involved.
Madam Chair, Representative Mannix, that might very well be possible. I think that's something which Mr. Shepard would then probably want to discuss with the FBI and get their interpretation of how they would view that. But it's certainly worth exploring.
Be interested in knowing what their radar signals are on that one. One other question, Madam Chair.
Go ahead, Representative Mannix.
In this whole approach, in terms of the cleanup costs, I'm concerned about DEQ being given what I'll call a blank check right now, because in the environmental area, with all due deference to environmental concerns, every time there's a dollar available, it will be spent. And that may be good or bad, but that seems to be a fact of life. And if we're going to be committing a certain proportion of the resources, I think that we're going to get Cadillac cleanups of meth labs when there may be other environmental problems that aren't being addressed nearly as well. Have you got any reaction to that?
Madam Chair, Representative Mannix, as I understand the way this account would function, it would have spending, the same type of spending control through Ways and Means and the Emergency Board as any other special account. That is, although the funds would be continuously appropriated, and perhaps those of you with more experience on Ways and Means can correct me if I'm wrong, a spending limitation would nevertheless be established by the Ways and Means Committee, and that if the more funds came in over that limit, the department would be required to return to the Emergency Board and ask for increased spending authority, and in that way it would be possible to keep track of the costs. If I could also add that DEQ, in fact, has been funding a fair amount of the administrative expenses of this program out of its own base budget. They estimate one FTE, which is not funded, which they are having to scrape together out of other programs in order to support this, because it has been funded at a level which has allowed them to merely scrape by.
Thank you.
Other questions? Thank you, Ms. President.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Stevie Remington, Executive Director of the ACLU of Oregon, and our amendments are attached, dated 3/14/89, and there's a whole series, and as most of you know, my associate David Fidanke's been doing all this, and he took off for Hawaii. I thought I would just talk about the main subjects the amendments deal with. First, there is a major one dealing with real property, and defining property as not including real property except any portion of real property which was purchased with the proceeds of prohibited conduct. The second major amendment is on amendments on pages 4 and 5, which would change the word where you refer to unconstitutional seizures, changing it to unlawful. The third set of amendments deal with changing from the standard of reasonable suspicion to probable cause. The fourth is to insert that local governments can enact forfeitures when it is authorized by statute. Number five is a minor amendment on page 1. Saying that it is intended to be, forfeitures are intended to be remedial and not punitive. The Sixth Amendment deals with putting the claimants on equal footing with the prosecution and allowing motions to be made by counsel claimant or counsel for claimant. Seventh ones are to make clear that the proceeds are a forfeiture to the state and not to the local government. And the Eighth Amendments are providing for a limitation on the use of the forfeited property for only 1 year.
Ms. Remington, yes. if I might, for the life of me, I can't understand what the purpose of that is. Why would you want to limit the property for 1 year? I mean, what's...
My understanding is that it was generated by the concern about having bounty hunting by local governments, diversion of a law enforcement simply to get proceeds.
That's what the whole thrust of the amendment seemed to be.
Finally, on page 4 are some language that Mr. Fedanke drew up after the hearing on the 20th from suggestions made by various members of the committee. The suggestion of Representative Bauman that they delete the prostitution and gambling. The suggestion of Representative Mannix, which allows the criminal defendant to stay the forfeiture as well as the counsel for the in the civil matter. And finally, number 10, some language on the suggestion of Representative Edmondson to deal with the innocent owners of property acquired prior to the use or the criminal use. And in case, I think Mr. Fedanke told me that he hadn't told the story of one of our cases that is directly related. We represented people in a civil forfeiture in Clackamas County. We did not make any law because it was settled prior to trial. But the situation there was a woman whose spouse was using their property to grow some marijuana. She was very much concerned about it, discussed it with her adult children. There was some thought of her reporting to the police, she having failed to persuade him not to do this, and concerned about his health as well in an addiction. But eventually they agreed that the son, who lived somewhere else, would actually do the reporting to the police, which gave them probable cause and a search warrant. And they came and charged him with a criminal offense and also proceeded with a civil forfeiture. By this time, they're way behind on their taxes. The husband is unemployed, and they're about to have the house, which was their only property, sacrificed. The woman was entirely innocent of any participation, and the only reason she didn't report it herself was because she feared it would destroy their marital relationship, which she hoped to preserve. And so this is suggested language that would allow this woman to be, and others similarly situated, to be protected against the loss of her interest in the property.
Mr. Chair, what you've labeled as amendment number 3, going from reasonable suspicion to probable cause, I think I know the reason for it, but why don't you explain, if you would, please.
We would like to see the higher standard. Reasonable suspicion is a lower standard, and this is a very serious deprivation in the end, and we think there ought to be probable cause before you can.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Bankers Association, I assume we're just going down the list.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Ken Sherman. I have an office at 687 Court Street, and I represent the Oregon Bankers Association. Our previously offered amendments are at item 4 in your packet. There are two amendments here. The first amendment is an attempt to clarify language in subparagraph 4 on page 1 of the bill, and the amendments that were previously offered by Mr. Shepard, the draft, Handen Gross draft dated 3/26/89, rewrite our revision, and frankly, we think theirs is an improvement on ours. So we would suggest that we go along with the Handen Gross version of our first amendment in replacement then of our first amendment.
Excuse me, which amendment are we referring to?
We're going to hold okay. that for a second here, Mr. Chairman.
Sure.
Council.
Sure, Madam Chair, if I could. On the second page of the material here, you'll notice a section by section. What would be done is replacing number C for the bankers, replacing that for right here, the first page of the Handen Gross. The bankers, I believe, and the local government have come to a agreement as to the best language for that particular issue.
Do I understand that amendment number 4 now, you're not seeking that at all then? Because of at least what we have so far in the Handen Gross version?
Madam Chair, Representative Mannix, we are not seeking now the first part of amendment number 4, and I will speak shortly to the second part of that, which deals with DWS.
Thank you.
It's only the first part of that that we're suggesting that we replace with the AOC amendments.
Okay, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The second amendment that we have offered occurs on page 3 of the printed bill, and we have suggested in response to the adoption recently of the Portland ordinance that we add as prohibited conduct violation of ORS 811-175 or 182, where the person's driving privileges were suspended or revoked as a result of conviction for driving under the influence of intoxicants. As I know the committee is aware, the Portland ordinance specifically looks to the legislature to address this issue of DWS under these circumstances, and our amendments are simply an attempt to do that in response to the Portland ordinance. And we believe that notwithstanding the fact that that particular change has not been incorporated into these Handen Gross amendments, that your final version of the bill should include that additional reference to prohibited conduct.
Question. Who's in charge here? Question, Mr. Chair.
Question.
It's like a bad dream. You ask the question, there's no chair.
The gavel is always there.
Representative Burton and Senator Phillips and somebody else introduced a bill last week that would sort of a civil sanction roadblock bill. I don't know if you're familiar with it, and I don't know if you know how it dovetails with your proposed amendment here.
I'm not specifically familiar with it, Representative. I've heard the Attorney General speak of a roadblock bill, and I'm not sure it's the same concept.
I think it is, probably. Okay. And I realize that their bill doesn't have conviction. It's not a criminal sanction, and your language here talks about a conviction for driving under the influence of intoxicants. I just want to flag that issue because I would hope that these two ideas would not be inconsistent. I don't think they need to be inconsistent, but we might want to look at that at some point.
I agree. Thank you.
Further questions? Representative Nash.
I have a question. You're advocating that forfeiture be allowed for vehicles when someone's been convicted of driving under the influence of intoxicants or driving while suspended. Is that correct?
That is correct, where the suspension or the revocation was a result of a conviction for driving under the influence of intoxicants.
Why? Why would the bankers be in favor of an amendment like that? It seems to me like they have a lot of problems with the liens that you have on cars, and because a lot of nice people get popped for DUII.
Mr. Chair, Representative Minnis, one of our primary concerns in being involved in this process has been to bring to this whole area of civil forfeiture uniformity. And we are concerned by the adoption by our state's largest metropolitan area of an ordinance which is a far cry from being uniform in its treatment and approach to the process of forfeiture. And so when we became aware of the adoption of that ordinance, and particularly reading within that ordinance the language which calls upon the legislature or encourages the legislature to address this, we felt that it was appropriate to add linkage to this bill in the interest of uniformity. And that is really the sole reason why we have recommended that.
Well, Madam Chair, if I could, I'm remembering back to the last legislature when there were some similar bills involved. In fact, one that I think my name was on. And as I recall, the bankers weren't exactly thrilled with it. And as I recall, the dissertation given by the bankers was that it would wreak havoc on the liens that are there against the cars and the priority of the liens and ad infinitum, so on and so forth. And now you're coming in supporting a concept, but I'm not hearing any testimony regarding positions on liens and why there's been a significant shift in your policy.
Mr. Chair, or Madam Chair, Representative Minnis, I think it's absolutely correct that we did oppose the drafts that were offered in 1987. Since that time, we've worked very diligently with other people who've been interested in this area to address those concerns about liens and the interests in general of innocent people in property that might be subject to forfeiture. We feel that this bill does that, that it represents a reasonable compromise on those issues, and that civil forfeiture, if prudently addressed, can represent a good law enforcement tool. And that's why we've been generally supportive of the bill, and that's why we would support the addition of this particular offense as prohibited conduct, provided that these protections and these balancing provisions are part of that law.
Madam Chair, Frank Bronner with the Oregon Bankers Association. Add to that, Representative Minnis, it's not just the City of Portland that already has an ordinance that becomes effective 90 days after this session adjourns unless this session addresses it. We have several other cities that have similar ordinances. Our fear is that we will have forfeiture for DWI. We can't tolerate 250 different ordinances around the state. 2282 has been an interim effort that we participated in. The process is known. If there is to be forfeiture, then it ought to follow the same rules and procedures. It should be the same.
Madam Chair.
Representative Clark. I'm just looking at the language again on the amendment. Where the person's driving privileges were suspended or revoked as a result of a conviction for driving under the influence of intoxicants, would not be your intent to have this provision come into effect for someone who refuses, for example, to take a breathalyzer test. Is that correct?
That's correct. And again, we were trying to dovetail with the language out of the Portland ordinance, Representative.
And I guess, Madam Chair, one last question. The only thing that bothers me about the amendment is the use of the word conviction. As a result of conviction for driving under the influence of intoxicants. And the Oregon Constitution, I think, still says that you can't have forfeiture of a state as a result of conviction. And I don't know if that word snuck in here somehow or if you're just taking the language directly out of the Portland ordinance.
Madam Chair, Representative Clark, we are taking language right out of the Portland ordinance. If you are driving while suspended, which resulted as after a conviction for DUI, then the vehicle is subject for forfeiture. You have several bills before this assembly that deal in the same way.
Actually, if it clarifies, and I don't know if it clarifies or it just makes things worse, Representative Clark, but this is for not because of a conviction of would shortly be a conviction of driving while suspended. The point is, if you are suspended because of a prior DUII, if as a result of your conviction for DUII, your driving privileges are suspended, you subsequently drive and are pulled over and identified as someone who is driving a vehicle whose driving privileges have been suspended as a result of conviction for DUII, then, under this amendment, your vehicle would become liable to forfeiture.
Okay, so
as a result of your conviction, but as a result of your driving.
So the operative language there is ORS 811.175.
Correct.
And not the conviction for driving under the influence of intoxicants. Okay. Pardon my density.
No, it's... Well, the word conviction is there, Representative Clark. You're right about that. Representative Mannix.
You don't have any other amendments that you're offering at this time?
No, we do not.
Have you taken a look at the governor's amendments by chance in regard to the forfeiture proceedings and the use of the forfeiture money? If you haven't, that's all right. I just was curious.
We haven't recently, and I know that the governor's representative just testified a few minutes ago, and I'm not quite sure how that changes things.
It doesn't change what you're talking about, I think. But you might take a look and let us know if it does. Thank you.
Madam Chair.